Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
I learned the value of hard work very early on from the people around me. I grew up in a low-income country, and like, you know, things were never handed to us or to me or to my family or whatever. Like, you had to work hard for them. And to me, I'm like, that's how it should be. Raising my little one in the U.S., I think I worry that she may not know her privilege, like she may not understand her own privilege. We arrived in this country with $101.67. I have a master's degree and two bachelor's degree. We own a home. We have a car. I mean, I have a phone. You know, we have a laptop at home. But that's not like, it's, I'm not trying to be funny, but like, it's a big deal. And in my head, I'm like, I am so grateful. And therefore, I want to be able to have that be passed on.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to do with her. She doesn't know any better. It has nothing to do. She's the sweetest. She is so sweet. She's loving and cuddly and so sweet. But at the same time, I want her to be able to know that there are people that go without.
Yeah.
Like, will she be generous? Will she be kind? Will she be a good human being? If she ends up not being as appreciative or grateful or maybe understanding her privilege, then maybe I failed. Maybe I didn't do my job in helping her get there.
This is Motherhood Sessions. I'm Dr. Alexandra Sachs. Today I'm talking with a woman we're calling Dee. She lives in a quiet suburb of Washington, D.C. with her husband and 2-year-old daughter. Dee's family is originally from India, but she grew up in Kenya. Then, at the age of 19, she immigrated to the U.S. with her family. They were seeking asylum after racially motivated violence flared up in their hometown. Now, 20 years later, Dee has built a life of safety and stability. But she's unsure of how to raise a daughter in such a different environment than the one she grew up in.
I think my childhood was a mixed bag.
How so?
So we lived in a coastal town. It's like a tiny island the size of Key West is what I tell people. It's small. It wasn't a super rich neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I think it was like middle of the road by Kenyan standards. It wasn't like high end, but it wasn't complete like poverty. Mm-hmm. But it was just a very idyllic. Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very like laid back, coastal type environment. There was this building across from us that was perpetually under construction. We kept joking how like the owner kept running out of money after like one little brick was being put on. So there was always this like construction site that gave us lots of fodder to do nefarious activities.
Uh-huh.
But then at the age of 14, my dad died. And I had to grow up very fast.
Yeah. How did your dad die?
He had he had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had MI.
Do you remember that day?
Yeah, he had the MI right in front of me. My mom actually wasn't at home, and I was sitting in the living room doing my homework, and he came home, and he just sort of like clutched his chest and like had trouble walking. And in my head, I was like, I don't know what's happening, so I need to get help. And he's a big man. He was a big man, 6 foot, you know, I don't know, 250 pounds or something like that. So I little me, I wasn't going to be able to hold him up. So I called for my neighbors and said, hey, I need help. You know, daddy's not doing well. Can you please come help, like, look up, like, what's happening? And that we need to call my mom. Like, I think we need to take him to the hospital now.
You must have been so scared.
I was. I just wanted my mom there. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And I don't know if anything that I'm doing is helping. So I think I, like, by the time my mom came home, like, the neighbors were already taking him down. And so then she went off to the hospital. And I think he was pronounced dead upon arrival. So I don't know if they worked on him or what they did to work him up. But yeah, and it wasn't until very late that night that, like, my mom came home, and I just knew. Like, no one ever told me that my dad passed away. I just knew. And then in my culture, the firstborn child, actually the firstborn son, takes on, like, a bunch of responsibility as far as, like, things that need to be done for the funeral. And often the daughter doesn't get, like, much, you know, the boy child is given a little bit more sort of status or whatever. But my mom insisted. She's like, she is my firstborn son. She should be there. So I got
to. There are only two. It's just you and your sister.
Yeah. And she kept saying it. She's like, she is my firstborn son.
Right.
That, like, this all of a sudden been like, oh, I am her firstborn son.
So I guess you describe this as being a time where you feel like your childhood kind of, the innocence of your childhood ended.
Yeah. I think at the age of 14, I just knew all of a sudden that I couldn't be a child and that I had to help my mom. And, you know, and she, bless her heart, she's like an amazing mother. She worked so hard to sort of help me and my sister get through life. But it was just very real to me that I just couldn't be this carefree kid. I really had to figure out my life. And I had a little sister that also depended on me. But I just feel like I took on a parenting role very, very early. And then we moved. My mom, she, in her mind, she was like, okay, I have two girls. I have to figure out how to get them situated in life and how to sort of, like, you know, get us away from where we were. Because increasingly, like, from a safety perspective, it was hard.
In what way?
From a safety perspective, like, just, like, the age that we were, we had heard a lot of, like, girls getting raped and that belonged to our skin color and all of that.
In your town?
In our town.
So yeah. there had been attacks on young girls?
Yes. We actually knew family friends whose little girl was, you know, kidnapped and taken away. And it was just horrible, horrible stuff that you just don't want anybody to think about, kind of thing. And so I think that she, in her mind, was like, I got to protect my girls. And it was, yeah, systematically happening to people, at least at that time, people who were Indian and they were living in Kenya. And historically, there has been tension in Kenya amongst folks of Indian background who've been living there for a while.
There was tension between the Kenyans who were Black and the Kenyans who were Indian.
Yes.
There was racism between those two groups.
I think so. Actually, I know so. When Kenya was colonized by the British, they basically made Indians the, like, perhaps the civil servants in the government, or they gave them different positions of power. So I think that with that legacy, I think that that then has manifested in today, this sense of like, well, these foreigners have taken resources from us, and now they're really well off, and they're able to own, you know, whatever, land or businesses or homes. And here, you know, there's just
there was tension. Did it go both ways?
I think so. Yeah. I don't think Indian people were very nice, like, to Black people either. I saw some things that I'm just like, this is, you're not being very, you're not treating people with respect. You know, there's just this, like.
Right. So there's a real division from your experience before your dad died, before you were 14, where you had a real sense of harmony and safety in your neighborhood.
Yeah. I now, as you're talking to me, I'm realizing part of it is probably also that the curtain was lifted after my dad passed away, and therefore I was exposed to perhaps more adult conversations. Maybe I was exposed to a bit more responsibility and all of that. So I had to like maybe shift my mind to think in a different way. Maybe it existed. And maybe my parents were always worried. Who knows?
Right. And so you moved. You moved because there was crime in your town that you were more aware of after you were 14 and your mom was increasingly concerned about.
I think that's it. I think that she felt that because she was now solely responsible, that this was all on her and that she felt probably, you know, that she just couldn't like physically, what's the word? Like, she couldn't physically control things.
Yeah.
And so if things were to happen, she's like, well, I don't have a, I don't know, for lack of a better word, to make it sound really
sexist.
She's
not a 6 foot tall man.
Yeah. She's like, I don't have a man by my side to like fight off the bad guys. You know, like if this is like probably what she was thinking. And so, And then things that happened that like, I think that just made it harder, that just got the urgency for her to be like, we need to just leave. This is not a good, like, I just don't see a good way.
Elevate every morning with Tommy John's Second Skin underwear. The luxurious support of Second Skin guarantees everything will go smoothly. With over 20 million pairs sold and thousands of five-star reviews, guys love Tommy John. Plus, your most valuable assets are covered with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear or its free guarantee. Shop Tommy John's Friends and Family Sale right now and get 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Spotify. TommyJohn.com/Spotify. See site for details.
So I think you're worried about your daughter missing something because she's growing up in Washington, D.C., and it was something you got that seems important to you or something you're proud of about that informs your identity in a very clear way.
Yeah. So I think the I tend to live in, like, not I tend to live in, like, there's the ideals that, that I see, and I want to strive for those ideals. But then I also realistically, like, I know she's not going to have the same exact childhood. Like, she's not. That's just not reality.
Right.
But in my brain, I'm like, but I want her to have this piece and this piece and this piece.
From your past.
From my past.
What are you worried your daughter is missing by growing up in the U.S.?
I worry that she won't know her roots to some degree. And that that might lend itself to not being grateful and appreciative of what she does have. And I don't want her to, like, I don't want to specifically deprive her just so she can understand. Like, that's not my thing either. But at the same time, it was hard for me to register for things for our baby shower. Like, I kept getting told by my friends and people that were hosting, they were like, you need to put more on here. I'm like, but that's enough. Like, what more does she need? And she's like, no, people want to, like, bless you. They want to give you. And I'm like, but she doesn't need 8 million stuffed toys. You know, and not that we register for that, but she got them anyway. You know, it just, in my head, I'm like, I think I have a hard time with stuff. because I didn't have a lot of stuff. And therefore, I find it hard when my child is being bestowed with stuff that I see that I'm like, will she appreciate this stuff?
Yeah.
I worry that if she turns out to be spoiled, lack of a better word, spoiled brat, I'm just going to have a hard time with that. And that will she be generous? You know, will she be kind? Will she understand that, like, there is life outside her little bubble?
Will you like her?
Aw, I hope I always do.
But I think that's what you're afraid of. I think that's what you're anxious about.
Yeah, maybe.
You look so sad right now.
I don't know. I had a hard time liking her in the beginning. I don't think I was officially diagnosed, but I think I had a little bit of postpartum. I think, you know,
depression.
Yeah, depression. Thank you. I think, you know, breastfeeding was hard. The early days were hard. She had colic. She cried for hours on end. Reflux. Like, we couldn't put her down. My husband, like, I tell people, not tell people, but, like, we have this joke of how him and I both were not horizontal at the same time for the first 8 weeks of her life. Because we were holding her upright and was sleeping on a chair, which is, you know, they tell you not to do that. But, like, it's the only way she was quiet, where she wouldn't cry. And I didn't like her very much. I think it took me time. Someone said to me that, like, you fall in love very slowly. I felt, you know, I don't know where I heard that. But maybe, like, I didn't fall in love with her as quickly as most moms do.
Or maybe a lot of moms take time to bond with their babies, too.
Yeah. And maybe I was looking sad earlier just now that I'm like, I'm finally at the place where I, like, actually like her. And now I'm like, I don't want to not like her again. That was horrible back then because it felt like, you know, everyone's joyous around the baby and I just couldn't feel joy. And to that feeling that I had when she was first born or, you know, in her early days, I'm like, I hate that. I don't want to feel that way towards her.
But that's, I think, what you're nervous about. That's what you're here to talk about. You're here to plan and educate yourself and protect yourself for the future, for how to think about how to parent a kid who's going to have a lot of things that you didn't have as a child, and how to parent that type of a person so that she can grow up as someone who you do like.
Yeah.
As your kid with the values that you're proud of.
And then I worry that am I swinging the pendulum the other way, like overly, you know.
Indulgent or harsh.
Harsh. Overly harsh on
with her. Because you're worried that you're afraid of her becoming spoiled.
Yes. Yes. Like, my husband, he is a kind, gracious man. He loves so well, and he loves her so well. And, like, I can see their relationship, and sometimes I'm like, why can't I just relax and just enjoy her? Why can't I just, like, feel like I can just enjoy her and love on her without worrying, you know, that, like, by loving on her unreservedly, is that the word? Like, unabashedly, if I love on her unabashedly, that she's going to be okay. I think I feel like I need to hustle to get myself in a stable situation, that I can't really fully relax because, you know, what if something were to happen? What if the bottom were to fall out again?
Right.
And so then I'm like, I really can't fully relax.
Do you think that you are still working through some feelings about what was kind of taken away from you at the age 14? And maybe you have... there is some grieving that you're still doing about that, and that perhaps that may get stirred up for you at points as you look at your daughter and her sort of the comforts and privileges that she will have.
I think so. I mean, I didn't think about it before this as in the clear, crisp way like you put it. I think that's also something that I struggle with a lot is, you know, what, like, if I allow myself to feel the fullness of joy and the fullness of life, and I taste that, and then all of a sudden that fullness is taken away, I am going to be shattered. So I feel this need to always be protecting myself.
Yeah.
And that's taking away the joy of mothering for me. God, I never realized that until I just said it right now.
However we slice this, I think there are a lot of different ways to look at kind of like the fear you walked in with and what it's really about. I think the general theme here is that the fear you walked in with is that you're not going to be a good enough mother. You're not going to be able to accomplish something that you want in your mothering to raise a mindful child with privilege. But I think what it's really about and the work that is going to help you resolve this fear is about kind of revisiting some unsolved wounds from your past, from that abrupt ending of the sweetness of your childhood when you had to grow up very fast at age 14. And I think you have some more grieving to do there so that your story can feel a little bit more healed and whole, and so that you can have some emotional space to view your daughter's story as new, as different.
But I think grieving is that. I think that there is a part where I'm like, it wasn't fair for me to not grow up without my dad. Like, she has something that I don't have, and how dare she?
Right.
And I'm like, that's not fair.
Right.
Like, she didn't choose it, neither did I.
I think it's hard for you to trust this thing that you're providing for your daughter because it was ripped away from you. Because I think you came in and you were locating the problem outside of you in these places that made you worried. Am I raising her in a place where she's not going to be a person who's thoughtful of her privilege and what she has and of diversity? But I think the problem, the thing that you need to work on, it's not outside. It's not as much in like the day-to-day parenting choices as it is, I think, about the inner work of healing this grief that is from your own childhood that is being activated by raising a child.
Yeah.
And I think what's so powerful today is that you've gotten in touch with some projection that I think has been happening where, you know, because you have had so much real trauma and loss, and I think you're, this fear about whether or not you're going to do a good job as a mom, I think there's more than one way to learn the lesson of being grateful for what you have. You learned it by not having.
Yeah.
You were grateful for what you had because you did not have. You did not have a telephone. You did not have, at a certain point, a father. Right? But that's not the only way to learn about privilege. The challenge is going to be to teach your daughter about what she has and what other people don't have, while she's not being deprived of anything.
And that's uncharted territory for me.
Right.
I don't know how to do that.
Well, you haven't lived through it yet.
Yeah.
But this was sort of the whole beautiful plan here. You know, that was the plan all along, is for your family to be in a different place than where you began.
Mm-hmm.
your mom, she did not want your daughter, her granddaughter, to be in the same position as you. Hmm. She wanted to move her family forward. That's part of why she left her home. And so, you know, you're exactly where your mom worked very hard for you to be, this confusing place of having and also being thoughtful.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to be so hard for you to teach your little girl that. It's hard to teach a two-year-old that because two-year-olds don't understand abstract concepts. So right now you're not going to teach it to her, but
yeah,
when she can understand more, I think that's not the hard part. I think you're going to find that to be easier than you fear. I think what the hard part is healing your own wounds and reckoning with your own grief about what you lost when you were 14.
I think you're right. I think that, like, experiencing joy fully is hard for me.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. Oh, my gosh.
But it's worth it. It's worth it because it's going to give you a clearer head to see your little girl in her separate childhood that is a separate story from your story. It's going to help you be a better mom.
Yeah, I think so. I think that it feels hopeful to have, I think our conversation has just been really hope, like right now I feel really hopeful to some degree that there is a way to work through some of this. It's not just this mental hamster wheel, you know, wheel turning thing that I gotta do this and what about that. Like, it feels hopeful that there is, like, this other thing that has been completely a stone unturned, or not turned yet, that maybe that there are ways to work on this that might help.
Motherhood Sessions is a production of Gimlet Media and Spotify. It's produced by Peter Bresnan. Our editors are Devin Taylor and Nazanin Rafsanjani. Music and mixing by Emma Munger. We'll have a brand new episode next week